This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk, and we have a very, very special guest. She's an Emmy Award-winning actress, Loretta Swit. Yes, Loretta Swit from MASH. She's here to talk about a book, Switheart, The Watercolor Artistry and Animal Activism of Loretta Swit. It's by her and Mies Hora. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
I was so worried I was going to say the name of that book wrong.
No, you did it beautifully. Wow.
I guess I'm getting used to this. It is such a treat to talk to you. I've been looking forward to this for a couple of months now. When they told me you were available to do an interview, I was so happy.
Oh, how nice. Well, I was... I'm glad I gave you some cheer for Christmas.
Well, you're a legend. You're an absolute legend in TV, and TV is what I grew up with, you know?
Yes, didn't we all?
But you, no, I mean...
I feel I did, too. I grew up in television.
And when I came home from school and was able to... And in the afternoon, they had reruns of MASH on. I'd sit and watch and have something to eat. The joy that brought me, I can't even begin to tell you what that meant to me.
Well, that what you say, and I've heard this before, it brings great joy to me. The outreach of television in a positive fashion can be so inspiring, what we can accomplish with a positive outreach, and I felt MASH did that. It brought families together.
Right.
People watched it together. They let their kids watch it with them because they trusted us with their kids, you know, and we would babysit.
Exactly.
And then, of course, the longevity of this show makes for accruing new fans every generation. I'm getting fan mail written in crayon. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing to have been a part of. You know, it's a wonderful, wonderful feeling that you have reached out and touched so many hearts, and there's nothing like it. You have to be there. There's hard to describe. Yeah,
exactly. And I was going to say, all the watercolor paintings in this book are yours. You actually did them yourself.
Are mine, except for the lithograph of the MASH group.
Right, which is an amazing lithograph.
It's a beautiful thing. He did a beautiful job, and that was a surprise to us. We didn't pose for that. It was a collection of his thoughts from different things that he's seen of us. And it was presented to us at our 10th anniversary, a 10th year of first run. And it was, you know, overwhelming, beautiful. Beautiful. I love it.
So how do you feel today? You're 79 years old. I hope you don't mind me saying that.
No, I actually I'm very proud of having come this far.
Well, we're proud you've made it this far.
It's kind of a bittersweet giggle there because I've lost so many friends this year. So many friends, and now Debbie, whom I knew quite well,
such
a shocker.
Yes.
Such a shocker. And Carrie, whom I never met but adored. I just thought she's one of the greatest stand-up comics, and she and as an actress, I loved her work. And she was so beset with devils.
Debbie just seemed like such a happy person. Just that, like you could just talk to her.
She's a very positive person. Very positive person. And of course, Carrie had all these emotional problems. She was bipolar. She was always, medicated. Losing them just a day apart, it was just too shocking.
It is. It's something that you can't even wrap your mind around it because it's just so...
Yeah.
It's something you just hope never happens again.
Yes, yes. And, you know, it will.
Yeah.
It will.
Exactly.
Cousin Zakas, yeah.
Now you're best friends with Alan Alda right now. I mean, have you always been best friends with him?
We're a family. Mm-hmm. The MASH group is a family, mm-hmm. close knit. I mean, it's a wonderful thing, actually. And some people have said, well, of course, how could it not happen? You were together for 11 years. Let me tell you, it doesn't necessarily work that way.
Exactly.
You know? And we did have some changes. I mean, we've lost some people. We lost McLean, and then Larry Linville died. Gary left the show, I think, in year 7. And we had all these extraordinary happenings in our series, on our lives, where we acquired a Mike Farrell, whom I adore, but we lost Wayne Rogers just recently. That was a big hit,
yeah.
Emotionally. And in any event, it was such a large slice of life, of everybody's life, because the audience got to feel we were family.
Exactly.
And so it's really been an incredible journey.
Well, you still have Jamie.
Jamie's fine, thank you very much. Jamie's fine. Everybody right now is just fine. Alan and I are actually, yes, neighbors. And yes, of course, we're very close. He wrote a lovely quote for the book. Let me look and find my book and read it to you, because you don't have your very own.
Her paintings are
lovely.
I do have it, actually. Her paintings are created as much with her compassion and dedication as they are with her talent and artful vision.
Isn't that a lovely thing to say? Yes, it's a lovely thing to say. I think there is so much truth to that, because a lot of my artist friends do not do animals. They feel animals are very difficult for them. Oh, of course, they do portraits or landscapes, or whatever, which I don't do.
Right.
But I am convinced that when people say my animals have such life, it's because of what Alan has said. It's done with my compassion for where I am, you know, the humane environment where I live. And I think that imbues itself onto the painting. You know, I step back from a painting sometimes and think, oh my God, that's good, yeah. Those eyes are looking right into me, or whatever. You
exactly,
know?
Yeah.
I'm not trained. I should probably say that, because you don't have the book. I'm not a trained artist. I evolved from when I was 6. I was inspired by winning an art prize when I was 6 years old. But I love painting and drawing and sketching. And I see an animal somewhere, I take a photograph. This is a painting, you know. There's one, in fact, you may know of her. She's quite famous in theater. Her name is Mary Testa.
Oh.
She has a drop-dead fabulous voice. We were doing a play together, and she was going through her pocketbook or wallet, whatever, and I spied a picture of her dog, and I said, oh my God, I must do a painting of this dog. He's in the book. He's
really?
Got a main pin.
Oh.
Yeah, he's I have to get a book over to Mary as soon as they're out. But
right.
But in any event, I'm thrilled that I'm able to convey that with the paintings.
Right. Your love for animals is amazing. I mean, I look through and I see you on an elephant, and I see you with a crocodile, and I'm, you know, and it's like, this woman is fearless. She has no fear at all.
or totally crazed out of her mind.
Well, somebody should thank you for all you've done for animals. I want to be the first here. Thank you very much for everything you've done. It's just amazing, and somebody needs to do it, and I'm so glad you're not the only one, but I have you here, and I can thank you in person. So that's a wonderful thing to be able to do.
That's a wonderful, wonderful thing to say. Yes, there are more and more of us, I think, who are caring. I think knowledge is power. The more information we can get out there, the more people join our little band of fighting against cruelty and doing something about it, to, you know, doing something of meaning, something that's going to make a difference.
I see those commercials, you see those commercials on TV, and they just make you want to cry when you see the way the animals are treated.
Absolutely.
And you think, oh my, I hope I never come across anybody who does that to an animal, you know, and it's just horrific. And you
but
hear,
if you do, you can report them. That's how far we've come.
That's
years
good.
Ago, there was no such thing. So I have to be encouraged by how far we've come in the fight.
I remember that.
Yes, go on.
No, I was going to say, there was a thing not too long ago about a dog that was left in a car, and there were a woman went into the store and left her dog in the car, and there were people around, and they realized the dog was going to suffocate, and they smashed the window in to get the dog out. And I thought, wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people don't even think sometimes about their animals. They just leave them, and they don't realize till later that they've done something cruel.
Yeah. So I'd like to believe it's just a lack of knowledge. I like to think that it's not a purposeful cruelty. And I do believe in the goodness of the human spirit. I think that goodness is the strongest force of the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's why we're still around. We've gone through epic wars since the dawn of man, and we're still here trying to fix that.
Right. Now, what was your first pet?
A little rescue, and she was a mixed breed, and her name was Cheetah.
And, was this a dog?
Yes.
A dog. And how many animals do you have right now, even as we speak?
I have the Yorkie, which is like having three. But she's, I mean, terriers, I love terriers. They're so feisty.
Right.
And I have two cats. Who are not living with, they're around the corner with my housekeeper. They're around the corner waiting for me to come collect them. But I was in the middle of renovation for a while, and it's just not a good idea to have little cats running around renovation. I have a one male black and white tuxedo cat called Anubis, and there's a painting of Anubis in my book.
Oh.
And his litter mate, which my vet here says there's no way they were litter mates, but anyway, she's a Siamese, big blue eyes, brown, like a kind of a mink brown, slinky, and they're inseparable, and I've never seen them fight. They're just wonderful together. They sleep like spoons, you know, and
mm-hmm.
they're just adorable. But they're getting on. They're getting on. They're 15 this year. That's a big time.
Now, do people in your neighborhood see you walking your dogs occasionally?
The people in my neighborhood are walking their dogs. Every dog in the neighborhood. This is a dog town.
Is it?
We love our dogs. Oh, we love our dogs. We love our horses in the park. New York is a great city. Great city.
Now, are you acting even as we speak? I mean, do you have something going on that you're...
No, I'm talking to you as we speak.
What I mean, at this timing, do you have something...
I just closed in Eleanor. I have to remember that. It's a wonderful line. I just closed in Eleanor, which is a play called Eleanor, Her Secret Journey. And I was there in Laguna for only four shows. It was a special presentation. And I was thrilled with the age range of the attendees, because to have younger women interested in this woman, in this great woman. I think Eleanor was one of our great ladies, and she was the first one to take the title First Lady seriously. She really did something with it, and she was such a force behind a very fine man. In any event, it's a great joy to play her, and I was so glad to see the interest, not only in me, but Eleanor. And so I did that, and now I'm preparing to do six dance lessons in 6 weeks in Palm Springs. I'll be there for, I'll be there for a while, but I'll be playing performances for 2 weeks.
So how do you keep up? How do you keep up your energy? You seem to have so much energy. You seem to be able to. I mean, it's got to be a little difficult, or do you not? You just plow on and don't even see it. You
know? I love what I do. What I do is not work. People say, well, where are you going on vacation? Why would I take a vacation? My life is a vacation. If I'm on stage, I'm happy. If I'm working, I'm happy. That's my vacation. Why would I want to leave that and go sit on a beach somewhere? See, that's my psyche. That's how I think. It's how I've always thought. When I was a kid taking drama lessons or whatever in New York, people would want to fly over to Fire Island or the Hamptons or somewhere for the weekend. I would go, leave me alone in my city. I can enjoy my city. You'll all be out of here. There'll be less noise. And, you know,
exactly.
I didn't want to leave my city. And I feel the same way about taking vacations. Why would I want to do that? I do love to travel with a meaning, you know, where I'm going, I'm going to work, or I'm going to see something so spectacular that I can bring it into my life to have in my life as a part of either what I do with animals or the arts. You know, I travel certainly enriches you if you're trying to learn about other cultures and so forth, but to just go somewhere and do nothing is just not appealing to me. If I'm going to read, I'm going to read at home. But like for that, I was about to tell you about the rest of my plans this coming year. When I finish 6 and 6, we're planning to make a tour of that. Hopefully we'll start in the fall, unless we can bring it to Australia in their summertime, our wintertime. And then in our summertime, I'm going to be in Europe doing The Merry Wives of Windsor in England, Scotland, Italy, and Denmark.
That's remarkable.
Kind of next year.
That's wonderful. So you have so much to look forward to.
Yes.
Which is important. That's important in life. We need things to look forward to. Everybody needs that. That's what makes life a happy event.
My mother passed on when she was 106.
Oh, wow. Really?
And I would, let's say, when she was in her hundreds, like 103 or 4, I knew she was going to keep on going because she would say phrases like that. She'd say, you know what I want to do for Christmas next year? And it would be July, you know, and so I knew her mindset was not on dying or leaving. And when she was ready, it did change. You know, she would talk more about how very tired she felt and how she wanted to take a nap. She didn't hurt specifically, which was a blessing. Nothing localized, you know, that this hurts or that hurts. She was just very tired, and she was preparing to leave like a lady, you know. And she was quite something, very strong, very resilient.
Just like you.
Very. I do believe that we pass those qualities on to our kids. If by no other way, osmosis, watching her deal with life, watching her strengths and her, sure. I think that's also very Eastern European. I'm of Polish descent, and I find the Polish people to be that way, very resilient, very, just the location alone had to make them strong. They were constantly fighting off everybody who wanted to occupy Poland. Their resources and their position just made them so desirable. Anyway, so I think that probably cultivated a lot of their spirit, their resilience, and their, you know, get out there and do it.
Exactly. How long does it take you to do a watercolor picture?
It really varies because you can leave it, and then sometimes you should. It's very committing. You can do an oil painting, I'm told, for 6 months you'd keep doing, but you can't do that with watercolor. You put your brush down on that canvas, and you're committed. So sometimes you have to back off and look at it. You know, squint your eyes and say, where you should stop right now and go to bed, get some rest.
Well, I'm mesmerized by this dog on the cover.
Oh, she, yeah. That's a he, actually. Oh, he's a Bidawi rescue. I write about Bidawi in the book. Bidawi is our oldest shelter in Manhattan. They do incredible work. I'm very proud to be associated with them. Just recently, a few months ago, I got involved with rescuing five beautiful little happy accidents that never should have happened. The big thing is spay and neuter in my life. That's a big, forceful education, right, you know, to teach people, because we're killing millions of animals. But I called Bidawi and I drove out to the Hamptons to their shelter there, and they took these lovely puppies, and who were going to be huge, by the way. They were half pit bull and half mastiff. They were going to be huge. But the puppies were just, you know, their little faces, just their paws were larger than their little faces. They're going to be huge. But the Bidawi people gave them their shots, you know, vetted them, socialized them, trained them, you know, paper trained them, then took them out for whatever. And then place them in forever homes. And when they do that, Bidawi, you know, they'll go so far as check out the homes themselves, make sure it's puppy-proof. People don't know a lot about things like that. There are some plants that you can't have in the house with an animal for fear they'll take a nibble just out of curiosity.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're poisonous, you know, azaleas are, you know, I mean, I can, so there are lots of things, sometimes cleaning detergents and stuff, if they're accessible and the dog licks it, or, you know, so they puppy-proof the houses, and they check out the people who are interested in adoption come to the shelter, sit on the floor and play with them. It's not an accident. It's a marriage. And so we don't get returns. They know what they have and what they want. And so this is rescue and placement at its finest, and that's what we try to do everywhere. Another great program that I talk about with pride is Search Dog Rescue People, unbelievable group. They right now are, who knows, deployed somewhere in the world in the middle of a crisis, and these dogs and their handlers are digging people out of rubble. You know
what
I mean?
Wonderful.
It's just
a wonderful thing.
But it's a wonderful thing, but the beginning is what makes it so complete. We rescue these little dogs when they're babies, and we train them, and they in turn rescue us. They're usually labs or lab mixes turns out they are the best search rescues. And boy, we always have a lot of those ready for adoption.
I love this picture of you with the snake. And you look so young in the picture.
I'm actually wearing.
Well, what is it? Is there any danger with the snake strangling somebody?
Well, if you're afraid, obviously I was surrounded by people and cameras and stuff, but if you do something the snake doesn't understand, if it takes it as an act of aggression, it will tighten its grip.
Okay.
And that goes for primates. Primates, you think, oh, monkeys and cheetahs, well, they're very unpredictable, and they're so human-like. They're so like us so many ways. You forget, or at least I would. I do forget they're animals. I behave like they're my friends, and that can be off-putting to a primate, for example, who might take my hug as an act of aggression. I don't believe that. This is what I'm told. The trainer was always watching carefully, and he was actually losing it behind the camera every time I hugged the orangutan. But my mindset is communicating to them. I find the intellect and the instinct in animals are ours. When you put yourself back in touch with your own animal instincts, you communicate. I talk to my dog every day. She talks to me. I mean, there people will tell you who have that with animals. They know exactly what they're saying and feeling. I can't say that I did that with the alligator. I can say, though, I was surrounded by alligators when I took that picture, and I just had a sense of well-being. I just didn't think anything was going to happen. That aura, I believe, animals feel. I mean, sharks, for example, they sense fear miles away. I mean, but if you show no fear, and you're in the ocean, the open water, and you sink to the bottom, let's say, you can actually maybe hide inside or between rocks or something and not give off this fear, then you're really okay. A fish in distress will attract a predator.
Yeah.
So obviously the trick is not to stress out. Try to keep calm. I mean, they'll get your heartbeat if your heart rate is and that would be difficult to control. You see a mako or a blue tip coming straight at you with its mouth open.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to control your heartbeat.
Oh, know? I would think, yeah. I think I'd be a little terrified. Are you afraid of any animals at all?
Well, let's say I respect all of them. There are I play by their rules, but I would. There's a picture of me, I think, in the centerfold with a little cheetah. He and his brother and I were literally wrestling on the floor. They were so cute and so funny. They were 10 weeks old, and they had the equipment to hurt you, but if you know how to play with them, and they know you're playing. I mean, those little cubs, they suckle your thumb. I mean, they're babies, and
yeah.
And they know exactly what you're feeling and how they're feeling. Like at Farm Sanctuary, they rescued a pregnant goat, she gave birth at the sanctuary. The mother, they were telling me, was still so wary and untrusting of humans. But the babies, the kids that grew up at the sanctuary, were like totally domestic. I mean, they were trusting and loving and happy. It's how they were being treated. That's what they were responding to, and that's the way they grew up. That's why it's so important to rescue and rehab these animals that have been abused. Boy, do they respond. I have a friend who rescued a little Yorkie from a puppy mill, which I will always talk against. This little puppy was used as a baby machine to just producing Yorkies. It never had any time off, just kept getting mated and giving babies. She was kept in this tiny cage, so when she was rescued, all she did was walk in a circle. That's all she did. She walked in a circle. The circumference of her captivity, and it was heartbreaking, but of course the upside of the story is she's with my friend Mary, and she is not walking in circles anymore. It took a long time, may I throw in, and she's very insecure without Mary. Mary is her blue blanket. She's starting to trust me a little. I have pictures of her watching me on television. She's starting to trust me. But she usually has a rubber bone in her mouth for security, and but she has a life now.
Now even
loved and
When you were filming MASH, did you have animals on the set? Were you as much into animals then as you are today?
I've always been, quote, into animals. You mean bring my own?
Yeah, or did you have...
First.
Yeah.
Once or twice during rehearsal, I had a cat that I brought in, and she was so good. She would just sit on my lap, and nobody even knew she was there until one day she kind of got up on her hind legs, and her little paws went on the table, and she was peering over at Gary or McLean, and they go, "Oh my God, there's a little cat here! There's a little cat here!" It was so cute. She just sort of surfaced, you know, periscoped up and looked around, and then went back to nap on my lap. I would occasionally do that, but more often than not, you know, and because I had a big house then and had six dogs.
Wow.
And, but they did know, the writers wrote for us. They wrote an episode where the camp dog gets hit by a Jeep, and I find out, and I lose it. And Alan comes to me and says, he sees me choking up, and he says, "Let it go, release, cry, you know, scream, carry on, let it, you know." It was such an important element of our characters. She says to him, "I'm fine, don't be ridiculous. You know, I see people dying around me every day. What makes you think I'm going to cry over a dog?"
Right.
And he knows better, you know, and he says, "I see you sneaking food to that dog every day. Don't tell me that you're not choked up." And her release is also what's been bottled up watching young boys come in with torn limbs and, you know, and she has steeled herself against feeling, and now when the dog dies, she releases all of those feelings and she cries in his arms. And it's they did the writers, you know, I loved those writers. Oh my gosh, they gave us stuff to work with to reveal parts of our characters, and that's why we're family to our audience still, you know, their kids and then their kids' kids. When you have that kind of longevity, I started to understand during the first run, if you have a 10-year-old watching MASH, and when you finish MASH, he's in school, and a few years later, he's graduating, and he's maybe engaged, he marries, he has babies, and his kids are watching MASH reruns with him because it's his favorite show, and the wife, and the thing, and the stuff, and then their kids grow up, because it's been a lot of years. Their kids grow up and they have kids, so it becomes almost a family tradition. MASH has never been off the air. Mm-hmm. We went into syndication in year three, and we've never left.
That's because it's something special. It's just something amazingly special. I mean, it'll always be that way. No matter what, and no matter what generation watches it, they will still get something out of it.
Exactly. They may have the wrong war, and that doesn't matter either. When we were in first run, people sometimes thought that was Vietnam, and we used to say, "What difference does it make?" We were saying the same thing about war. It's terrible.
Right,
let's not
exactly
do it anymore.
Yeah, you're a very peaceful person. That's nice. I like that. We need more peace in this world.
Yeah, well, for sure.
We definitely need more. Now, was one of your favorite episodes the one where you were stuck alone with Hawkeye?
Comrades in Arms.
Yes.
Hawkeye wrote that. Alan wrote that for us.
He did. I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and he co-directed it with Burt Metcalf, who was the executive at that point in time, I believe. Yes, because Gene retired from the show and went on to other things. But I remember Gene called me the night the episodes aired, and he just loved it. He loved that the show had come so far where we could explore that possibility. I don't think the audience would have bought that sooner than when we finally got together and fell into each other's arms, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And it changed the characters from then on.
It did indeed. The characters evolved. They did.
Well, there was so much to Hot Lips to begin with. I mean, she was such a multi-dimensional person. It was so much fun to watch you play her, you know. And you had different moods with different episodes. It was great to watch.
Well, you know, you just got to thank the writers.
And you and Larry Lindell had such chemistry.
Larry, dear Larry. Yeah, we'd go behind the tent somewhere and would rehearse and then bring it to the director and he'd say, I love it, do it, you know. Larry was great that way. He'd always be willing to try things and rehearse things and why don't we suggest this, why don't we do that? And we did, and it was wonderful.
You must have the most amazing memories of it. I mean, I hope maybe you'll write a book about it someday.
I will. It won't be about MASH, but certainly the fattest chapter in the book.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's the reason in a book about activism or art, I would be remiss not to have a page devoted to my MASH family.
I would have loved to have seen you and Cagney and Lacey. That would have been incredible.
Well, you can always get the movie. I mean,
you're in the pilot. You're in the pilot, right?
Well, it wasn't a pilot.
No pilot.
The movie was number three. actually, it was number one movie, number three on the Nielsen.
Was it really? Wow.
60 minutes. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And they immediately said, "Let's do a series." They had tried, to get it on the air for 7 years or whatever. They told me that, you know, the producers, they couldn't somehow get it done, but we did it. And I would have done this series, but MASH wanted me not to.
So how were you after that in MASH? Was it difficult to go back to MASH? I mean, you still had a family there, but were you angry enough that it affected anything?
I don't follow. I didn't go back to MASH. I never left MASH.
No, I know that. I'm saying, not being able to do that, did that make you angry? Or did you just... love working on MASH.
I didn't fight to do it. I felt very torn about it. It wasn't like I was going to leap into it. I wasn't quite sure whether mm-hmm. that's what I wanted to do. And Harry Morgan, when he saw the numbers after the movie, he said, "That's your next series, Lorette." Mm-hmm. And I said, "I don't know, Harry, and you know, if I want to do that or whatever." I loved doing the character. I loved creating the character, but I would have had it worked out. But when they said, "No, we don't want you to go," same network, you know, "We want you please to stay where you are," and I had the contract, but you were still having fun on MASH though. MASH never stopped being a blessing.
Yeah, okay.
MASH was just a joy.
That was right. That was what I was trying to get at, whether MASH was still as much fun.
No, I didn't fight to do it. I didn't put up a fight. You know, "No, I'm leaving, and I don't care what you say," which is not my style anyhow. But I found myself just going with the flow, let's let karma take over here. This is what I meant. And then, of course, with that explosive final episode and everything that has happened since, all the kudos and the fame of the show, it's a classic, and I would have missed some of that.
Yeah, really. That's true.
And that would have really broken my heart, I think. Alan and I are the two who were from day one, and day final. We were the only two. And then Jamie was hired before the end of the first season as a featured player. He was brought in as a day player, and he was so outrageously wonderful that they said, get that boy, sign him to a contract. So on paper, it was the three of us, but from the pilot to the finale, it was just Alan and I, the diehards. We stayed.
What do you remember about the last day of filming?
It was surreal. You can't imagine what it was like. There was a sea of reporters. We were behind ropes trying to work the last scene. It was amazing. And when they called the final wrap, I mean, there wasn't a space to stand in. And journalists and reporters and the press were holding cameras above their heads. Flash was constantly flashing. Cameras were turning, tapes and everything, and we were trying to do the final scene in, not the finale, by the way. The final scene that we wrapped on was not from the finale. And when Burt Metcalf yelled, "That's a wrap," the champagne got corked out, you know, popped out.
Right.
And it was like a fountain. Everybody was getting wet and screaming. And we were all into each other and hugging and kissing. And then shortly afterwards, we were put on a bus, taken to the commissary, which had been set up like a theater. And we just did interviews for a long time, how it felt, what we felt, you know. It was surreal. I've got a lot of film of it happening because you look back at it and you say, my God, you know, my God. It was just, and the press just kept wanting to talk about it. And in the following months, they just wanted to keep talking about it, you know.
I just see you in those.
It was amazing.
Yeah. I flash it through my head of all the episodes and things that you said and the way your reactions to things are just priceless. I mean, just priceless scenes that just go on and on and on, like you said, and it brings back so many memories. And do you still watch the show? Do you sometimes turn it on and watch it?
Not purposely, but because I have all of them, obviously. I was going to tell you something else. What was it?
We were talking about the last episode and what it was like.
Right, but you were saying what I was talking about. And so it was so bittersweet. I mean, we all knew that we had to keep going on, and yet to let go was difficult. And we never did let go. We are still the closest of friends, and we're family. We're really family.
Yeah, there was.
Well, it's gone out of my head. But,
yeah, that's what happens. It's the short-term memory. I have the same problem.
No, I don't. I get on stage and talk alone for 2.5 hours, so I can't afford a short-term memory.
Wow. Yeah, that must be hard sometimes.
No, it's
not for you.
No, not for actors. That's what we do.
Yeah.
You know, they don't. They're quite. And actually, Shirley Valentine as a great example.
Yeah, I wish I had seen
her emotions. Yeah. Her emotions are all over the place, and as an actor, you can't prepare where you're going. You know, you have to go in there and experience that. It's 2 hours 15 actually, and most of the time people would say, "Oh God, how do you do all that dialogue?" The dialogue in Shirley is not what is challenging. What is challenging is to do all the characters that she imitates, that being funny, being touching, crying, whatever—all those things that Shirley experiences in front of you on stage.
Well, we know you're good at that, so.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen me on stage. Right. It's a whole different experience. My my dear friend, bless him, Lee Phillips, directed me a few times. We did some wonderful work together. And he came to see me on Broadway in same time next year, and he was just blown away. And I said, Lee, I don't know what you're carrying on about. We've worked together. We did this together. He said, and it was, what I was naming was film and television. And with a wave of his hand, just dismissed that. Oh, yeah, well, sure, but no, this was, well, there's something about watching live a person do that, like in same time next year, you age with very little assistance. You age 5 years every time the scene changes. So it's like a quick wig change and an update with your costume. And except for one, the 50s, you quick smear on that bright red lipstick of the 50s or something. But everything is acting and experiencing. And I worked with this brilliant actor, Ted Bessel. Just, he was brilliant.
And he died too young.
Oh, boy, did he ever. What a lovely man. God, crazy about him. And we would get out there and have a ball and just do that. He would get grayer, and then he had a mustache at the end. But, I mean, they're not tricks. They're just things that, as an audience, you watch and you believe that this is happening, and that's a craft.
That's the hard part, yeah. That's to convey that, yes.
Well, it's the fun part, actually. But when you have a craft, you can get on stage and do that. That's why having a craft is so essential for stage work. You know, television, or not television, but film stars very often want to try doing something on stage. And unless they've had that kind of training, it's quite different. It's
absolutely
really shocky, and they can't really always make that transition. But if you start on the stage, it's easier to go to the other mediums. You just have to take it down lot of notches.
You've never had any trouble remembering lines and working with others. You seem like you're fearless with everything.
I never think of it as being brave. This is what I do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The difference is,
well, maybe you're just so good at it.
You know, just I think you only know what you know. To me, everybody can do what I do. Anybody, you know. But I love doing it. Therefore, I do it. I have sometimes. Somebody will say, "God, I wish I could paint," and I say to them, "No, you don't." And they don't understand what I mean. So, to explain, if you really wanted to do it, you'd simply do it.
Exactly.
Don't look at a beautiful painting and say, God, I wish I could do that. You can admire it, but that's not what you mean. You don't mean you wish you could do that, because if you really wanted to do that, if you wanted to paint, you'd have to.
Right.
It's a drive you can't resist when you love something. I knew I was going to be an actress all my life. I was, when I'd read a book a day. I was an avid,
passionate
reader. Well, then you know what joy you can get from that.
Absolutely.
But I would be acting out all the characters in the book. My first class in acting, I realized I had been in rehearsal all my life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was doing. I was rehearsing with the book. Any book, I'd do any character, man, woman, child, dog, cat, whatever. I became those characters, and I didn't realize, you know, how I was preparing myself. So the language immediately made sense to me. And using me, using myself the way I do, it all made sense to me. And I found my niche. This is who I am. This is what I do. And painting, I'm sketching and drawing from the time I could sit high enough on the table, on the chair to reach the table. And now, my mother really didn't understand me, that part of me, because I was different from other children in that I'd rather draw and paint than go out and play some senseless game, or, you know, I wanted to be creating something. So I was always in that. I was always out there, whether I was a cheerleader or a drum majorette or directing a play in high school or starring in a play in high school or whatever. That's what I was doing. I was painting, I was reaching out, I was serving a purpose in my life. You know, I was entertaining. I was in dance class. I was teaching little kids how to dance. You know, it's been a natural evolution for me. I didn't.
You're just a very creative person.
You know?
You have and that's what keeps you going.
I think I have the need for expression, yes, and how it comes out in my case is creative or caring. I mean, I love to cook, for example. I'm a very creative cook.
Oh, wow.
I find cooking challenging and creative. I'm a vegan, and
right.
It's a challenge to do vegan food and make it taste like a gourmet dish. Because you're limited in you have to use substitutes for dairy, example. But I mean, but it's very gratifying to be able to do that. I had a Christmas party once, and I did a pasta with vodka sauce.
Mm.
Now, a normal vodka sauce, you have to use creams. Which
right.
is dairy, but veganism has come such a long way. We now have these really delicious substitutes, and I used my own calculus about how much and thing and stuff, and all my guests took home doggy bags. I mean, it was a great success. I think a lot of life can be creative. You can take cooking out of the mundane, you know, and be very creative and add something that, like, I love Chinese food, and it's because it's so vegan, you have to fuss very little. But I love throwing peanuts into vegetable fried rice, for example. And a lot of people think that's so unique. I think it's a beautiful marriage. It turns the rice crunchy, and, you know, so one of my favorite places is downtown in Chinatown. And whenever I order the fried rice, they automatically bring me a bowl of peanuts because they know that's what I want to do. Want to throw it into.
They know you well.
They know well. Yes, I'm a very, very good customer. I love their food. Oh my gosh!
I must say you have the most beautiful signature on your paintings too. I'm looking at it now. It's just the most gorgeous signature.
Oh.
I love that. Very creative.
Thank
very,
you.
Very nice. Just beautiful.
Catholic schools, you know, penmanship is actually a course you have to take. You know,
right.
The evolution of our technology has sort of unfortunately given handwriting or a beautiful handwriting a back seat. We don't write notes anymore. We don't write letters anymore. We sit down at the keyboard and bang it out, and, you know, and that's too bad. There's this wonderful speech Spencer Tracy has in Inherit the Wind, in which my friend Harry Morgan was the judge.
Harry Morgan.
Yeah, the best. Spence says, We it's a trade-off sometimes. Life, we have a progress sometimes is a trade-off. We can fly now. We can get on an airplane and we can fly. But the clouds and the heavens will reek of gasoline. We can no longer look at birds with the same wonder. You know, it was a beautiful speech about the trade-offs. He went from the Garden of Eden and watching the flight of birds and the beauty of it, and then airplanes, which is, you know, a tremendous evolution and a great technological triumph. It now is commonplace to fly. So the wonder of flight, we don't have that anymore. The telephone, he says, it's wonderful to be able to hear somebody's voice, but the letter writing has lost its charm.
Oh, yes.
It's easier to, you know, so, but it's a very interesting, wonderful, insightful observation that he makes.
Do you get together with, like, other animal people, like Betty White or Joanne Worley, or do you have...
Well, you're talking about all my close friends.
Yes.
Joanne Worley is president of Actors and Others for Animals, where I'm vice president. So, you know, Joanne and I know each other. Betty and I have been on a lot of campaigns together. We're together in this struggle for a long time. You didn't mention Gretchen Weiler, whom we lost to cancer.
Oh.
She was a great soldier in the battle against cruelty. She was amazing. And Earl Holliman. He is just relentless. Knock on any wagon park. Some star doing a movie and knock on that door and say, "Well, I'm Earl Holliman, and I'm here to collect money for Actors and Others for Animals." I mean, he was just amazing. And talk about what we do and where the money goes.
Was he able to raise a lot of money doing that?
I don't know with that tactic specifically. My point was just that he did the whole nine yards. He walked the talk and he talked the walk, like Gene Bauer for Farm Sanctuary. I met Gene in Chicago on a campaign against foie gras, and it was Chicago. It was winter, and Gene was wearing sandals because they were not made of leather. He doesn't wear leather. He doesn't exploit any animal element. But I was freezing in there. He was running around in his little non-leather sandals. And I said to him, "You are the best. You are a saint. You are really so committed."
Loretta, you have such a big heart. I mean, for animals and for people, you just seem to have so much love for everything. I mean, it's amazing, and it's something, and it's a tribute to you, because it's not everybody's like that, and I really am amazed and in all of that. I wish I were more like that.
You know, you are like that, and if you want to be more, you can be. You're in charge.
Mm-hmm.
You're in charge. You can be what you want to be.
Yeah.
You know, I think there are a lot of people out there who feel the way I do. Most of them don't have the platform. They don't have David calling them and saying, "Talk about yourself.
Yeah.
Tell us what you feel about things." So I find myself a member of a growing, growing legion of an army that have become more and more aware of what we can do to make a difference and change things, make it better. Not change for its sake, for its own sake, but to make things better. And we have in many ways. But, you know,
I was going to ask you if the proceeds from this book are going to help with any of the animal charities.
Oh God, I sure hope so. The funds, the proceeds go into a foundation called the Sweetheart Animal Alliance Foundation.
Wonderful.
The operative word there is alliance. My great dream is to join hands with a lot of other foundations and organizations, and we help each other. We're all on the same page. We're all fighting the same fight. And so, yes, I'm hoping that is what is going to happen. for example, on Farm Sanctuary, on any given day, you want to do something, you can sponsor an animal, give money towards the feeding and clothing and schooling. No, you can pay for its housing and feed. So let's say, I don't know, it's $20 a month to have a goat, be a friend of a goat. I could, from the foundation, I could do a goat, a cow, and a turkey, let's say, and that money will go out from the foundation every month to support those three animals. Let's, as a for instance, with actors and others, my gosh, we have so many programs, but mostly it's education. Mostly it's to teach young people about spaying and neutering and teach them that we are currently killing millions of animals every year because there's no home for them. And so you want to help. How can you help? What can I do, Ms. Sweet? Go to your shelter. Find out if you can volunteer to walk some of the dogs there. Find out if you can clean the kitty litter boxes, once a week. Or there's always something to
right,
do.
Exactly.
Buy a can of dog food and drop it off at the local ASPCA. There's always something.
Exactly.
And so people. Again, when I wish I could. You can.
Right.
You can. I can use you. Tell me, what hours are you free? I will give you something to do. I will suggest,
You're a total inspiration to everybody. That's just a wonderful thing, and I really mean that from my heart. Because it's not everybody that has done that. But you've devoted your life to just being as helpful as you possibly can be, and then some. And it just amazes me all the stuff you've done, all the awards you've won, and all the fun you've had, and all the amazing times you've had in your life. And you've met a lot of people, and you've spread that fear with everybody.
I've known some really great people, and I keep meeting great people. I just recently met Allison Eastwood, Clint's daughter.
And oh, really?
Lovely, lovely gal. Has her own organization, the Eastwood Ranch, and she rescues dogs and cats. And I love her to pieces. I'm on the phone with her, and I hear, ew, ew, ew. She said, I'm sorry, I'm feeding these kittens. It's feeding. Excuse me. And she was feeding this little herd of kittens that she
Good
rescued.
For her.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, they're some remarkable, wonderful, terrific people out there who just, Bernadette Peters began Broadway Barks. I mean, I can go on and keep naming all
these
wonderful people. And all of the charities, in my way of thinking, dovetail. I remember Earl had the experience of talking to somebody who said, I want to give my money to AIDS this year. And he said, and this is so true, he said, keep in mind that when AIDS first reared its ugly head, nobody went near the victims, not the doctors, not the nurses. They didn't know what they were coping with. They didn't know what they were doing about it. And animals would jump on their laps and lick their faces and give them the only drop of love and attention they were getting.
Wow.
So when you think about...
That's powerful.
Of course. But that's Earl. Earl's a saint. You know, I mean, he just, he could really hit home with just a statement. He once said to me, I'm sure you get this a lot, Lorette, that people ask us why animals. There are a lot of causes out there, not putting it down, but, he said, and the other day I said to somebody, Actors and Others for Animals gets about 1,000 telephone calls every day asking for help. And not one of those telephone calls is from an animal.
Hmm. Just gets you. It gets you thinking.
Yes. It says you help an animal, you help a person. You help a person, you help an animal. I mean, it's education mostly. And I mean, if you point out to a sensitive, beautiful woman that the fur coat she's wearing had 80 animals, 80 animals died indiscriminately to make that coat. This is brainstorming. This is how many? 80. 80. It just looks at the size of the coat. Yeah, 80. And then she goes into a department store and sees coat after coat after coat, and she starts to do the math and realizes that given the production of these amazing fake furs, I mean, they look, they're beautiful. You can't tell the difference. The difference is nobody died. A couple of synthetic fibers, maybe.
Right.
Nothing died indiscriminately or purposely.
Mm-hmm.
And they're twice as warm. They're a fraction of the cost. They don't need storage, and they don't smell in the rain, which real fur tends to give off a little bit of an odor in the rain. Just stuff like that. And then you give her that information, she's going to look at the fake furs and decide to do the humane thing.
Exactly. I love
because
this.
She's winning, you see.
Right. I love this picture of you with the seal. Your arms around the seal.
Oh, yeah, that sweet little, sweet little thing.
That thing
oh,
looks so.
God.
That animal looks so happy. It's sitting there in your arms.
I know. Yes.
I mean, you've created.
And I look pretty happy too.
You do too. That's true. I didn't mean to leave you out, but I'm just looking at the
animal. No.
The animal's face is just what strikes me. It's just I think about the cruelty that's done to those animals. I can't even.
Yeah.
I can't even think about it. It makes me crazy to even think about it.
Yeah, we want you to think about it, though. That's our whole thing. We want you to think about it, learn more, and do something about it. Make a mark. Make a footprint. My favorite, it's not my favorite. They're all my children. I can't, you know, you can't pick a favorite.
No.
But in the upper right-hand corner, I believe, is the orangutan hugging me.
Yes.
Look at her face. I mean, she was my pal. I mean, she was so loving and adorable. I've got a picture that's probably going to go into a second edition of her kissing me. I mean, it's just,
really?
You can't believe we had such a bonding relationship. It was just amazing. Of course, can't do that with her anymore now. But they are very strong. They are arboreal, so their strength from the waist through their torsos is phenomenal. They can just hug you and crush you and kill you,
you know
unless they love you.
Well, we don't want them to do that to you, Loretta. You're too much of a valuable.
Well, she just never threatened me at all. I just hugged her back, you know.
Well, you know, Loretta, the world's a much better place because of you. Do you realize that?
No, that's. I think you're like really off the wall now, David.
No, I believe it is. I think the world is better because of you. I mean, all the stuff you do. I mean, it can't help but be better. And I think everybody should. I wish everybody were like that.
There's an awful lot out there to be done. It's a daily, hourly, weekly. It's ever present. If there's a dollar to be made somewhere, somebody's going to suffer, and that's what we want to get rid of. You know.
Well, we have to let you go.
Yes, I have to jumpstart my day. I think you did that to me. You jump-started my day.
As long as I didn't wake you up, I'm happy.
No, I was up for my sink. My super said he was going to be in early to fix my sink.
And it overflowed
last night. He did, yeah.
Oh, good.
He's a good guy.
Oh, wonderful. Good for you. The book again, let's mention the book one more time. Sweetheart, Watercolor Artistry and Animal Activism of Loretta Swit by you and
it's
by...
Available. You can order it on the website right now as we speak. It's, of course, www.sweetheart, one word, as W-I-T-H-E-A-R-T, sweetheart.com. And you can order the book. You can see some other stuff. Other paintings of mine or whatever.
And I should mention Ultimate Symbol. They're the publishers. I didn't mention them before.
Mies Hora, I didn't wake up one morning and have this idea. Mies saw my paintings, heard me talk about what I did, and said, well, there's a book here that I have to do, you know. So I said, oh, yeah, okay. But yeah, sure.
Yeah, whatever you need. You're always willing to contribute. That's a beautiful thing.
Well, this was a win-win situation, you know, but... I've also, there are some things in the book you'll see that were commissions, which I really love to do. People will send me a picture of a deceased animal companion that they want to have as a memento, and that's wonderful to be able to give them something, a forever thing.
Absolutely.
A lot of good things keep coming out, you know. Good stimulates better.
Well, once
better
again, thank
stimulates
you.
Best.
Once again, thank you for being with us, and this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connolly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.